never stop fighting to make it home.
Ever felt like help was that far away? I always like to start with something funny. So there was a professor that got up in front of his class, and he basically said, I just don't believe in God. And to prove it, I'm going to give God 15 minutes to knock me off this platform. And if he doesn't, then it's going to prove to everybody here that there is no God. So for the next 15 minutes, this professor commenced to mock, ridicule, make fun. God, are you asleep? What's going on? Well, the last minute, a 300-pound football player was walking past the room, and he heard what was going on, dropped all of his books, and went headlong, full speed, and lowered his shoulder and hit this professor, knocking him from the stage. The professor gets up, pulls himself together, and says, "Why'd you do that?" He said, "Well, God told me that he was busy and he needed my help." I used to love in school when, I guess more junior high and even getting into high school, when I either had a big exam or a paper that was due and I had not done my work, which happened an awful lot. But then you'd go into the classroom and they had a projector set up there. And you're like, yes, yes, we get to watch a movie, and I don't really have to learn much, or I can tune out, or whatever goes through your head. But I got real excited, all right? I think God in film and God at the movies for us, when I first came to this church 5 years ago now, I can remember loving this series of God in film because of what was done with the films, how so many times you find God in film, and it's not even intended for you to find God in film, but that's what happens, you do. Bono, singer from U2, the lead singer from U2, met with Eugene Peterson, who actually wrote the paraphrased version of the Bible called The Message, and he said this. He asked him a question. Why do we need art or lyric poetry like the psalm? The only way we approach God, if we're honest, is through metaphor and through symbol. It's essential, not decorative. And I think we learn a lot from David in the Psalms. I think we can compare art today to exactly what God in film and what our world around us in art is. I think we develop a thing called noticing. Are integrating. We start noticing God. We start noticing his movement. Even in this series, God and film series are not easy to do. You know, a lot of times you may think, oh, this is real easy for Eric and Erica because they can just kind of take 4 weeks off and just get up and talk about a film. It's not the way it goes. So they're very, I'm kind of want some pity there. But I've had several people come up and say, hey, have you tried this film? Have you looked at this film? So everybody's got a different view of what God meant to them in this particular film. And I think the message, the underlying message for today is God is not just confined to our spiritual life. God is not just a part of our spiritual life. As a matter of fact, there's no such thing as God being a part of our spiritual life. God is a part of our life, which includes all the messy stuff. Hello? All right? So today, that's where we're going to go. Now, if you're wondering if we're going to ruin... How many of you have not seen The Martian? Let me see your hands. That's a lot of you. If you're wondering if we're going to ruin the movie for you today, then we are. All right? So, just prepare yourself, all right? But let's look at the first clip.
We're 11.5 and holding. Ready to go on your command. ready to launch. Commander, I need you to verbally tell me whether or not to
launch.
Central Standard Time, our satellites detected a storm approaching the Ares III mission site on Mars. At 6:45, the storm had escalated to severe, and we had no choice but to abort the mission. Thanks to the quick action of Commander Lewis, astronauts Beck, Johansson, Martinez, and Vogel were all able to reach the Mars ascent vehicle and perform an emergency launch at 7:28 Central Time. Unfortunately, during the evacuation, astronaut Mark Watney was struck by debris and killed. Commander Lewis and the rest of her team were able to intercept safely with the Hermes and are now heading home. But Mark Watney is dead.
Director Sanders!
Director Sanders! Director Sanders!
Director Sanders!
When astronauts blast off from the planet Mars, as you just saw, they leave behind Matt Damon's character, Mark Watney. Presumed dead because of this fierce storm with only a meager amount of supplies, the stranded visitor must utilize his wits and spirit to find a way to survive the hostile planet. Meanwhile, back on Earth, members of NASA and a team of international scientists work tirelessly to bring him home, while his crewmates hatch their own plan for a daring rescue mission. I see in this movie from the first 20 minutes, the Imago Dei, the image of God. How? Because of two things. I think these are two core things we can take from this movie today. The first, the value and worth of just one person. The value and worth of just one person. And here's the second thing we can take away. If anyone is that valuable, then anyone is that valuable. Let's look at it again. If anyone is that valuable, then anyone is that valuable. Ezekiel 18:4 says this, "Behold, all souls are mine. As the soul of the Father, so also the soul of the Son is mine." In Hebrew, this word is called nephesh. And it means life is God's. And did you notice in this film, and you'll see if you ever watch it, that the story's not built on his wife at home with the baby going and telling that story. And, oh, he's so important. He's a great dad. He's a great husband. And because of that, we've got to bring him home. We don't see Mark Watney's mom and the story, he's a great son, and that's his worth. No, all we see is just him and his crew. And that is enough. That is simply enough of dealing with, we are worth something. And we can't get past to the second one of knowing somebody else's worth until we get to the first one. And that's what we're going to see in this next scene. Now, let me give you a disclaimer, all right? We are a church rated R for reality. Do I hear an amen?
Amen.
So, you will see, you may hear some things that you may not be used to hearing in church, all right? But here is the second clip.
Is water. I have created 126 square meters of soil, but every cubic meter of soil requires 40 liters of water to be farmable. So I gotta make a lot more water. Good thing is I know the recipe. You take hydrogen, you add oxygen, you burn. Now I have hundreds of liters of unused hydrazine at the NDV. If I run the hydrazine over an iridium catalyst, it'll separate into N2 and H2. And then if I just direct the hydrogen into a small area and burn it. Luckily, in the history of humanity, nothing bad has ever happened from lighting hydrogen on fire. NASA hates fire because of the whole fire makes everybody die in space thing. So everything they sent us up here with is flame retardant, with the notable exception of Martinez's personal items. I am sorry, Martinez, but if you didn't want me to go through your stuff, you shouldn't have left me for dead on a desolate planet. By the way, I'm figuring you're going to be fine with this, given my present situation. Counting on you.
You're like, there was nothing bad in that. It was actually the wrong clip. Now I have no idea what the next clip's going to be. It's like, what's that? Okay, we're down two. We still have three clips left, right? Okay, all right. Well, if it happens to be the wrong clip, I'll just tell you what I was going to show you, okay? It's really interesting, this part of the movie, because it's a summary of God's, I think it's a summary of his rescue, what he's got to prepare for, but I believe also we tie it into the church of Ephesus and Ephesians, of some of God's rescue plan for us. And here's what Ephesians 2:4 says. But God is so rich in mercy and loved us so much that even though we were dead because of our sins, he gave us life when he raised Christ from the dead. It is only by God's grace that you have been saved. We are called to say yes to our worth. Not we're supposed to say yes. We are called to say yes to our worth. Stop trying to do. Stop trying to be a better person first. Stop trying to impress those around you. Whether it be your boss or your mate or a potential mate. Because most of the time if you get into a relationship, everything just kind of whatever. But the potential mate, or stop trying to work so hard psychologically, emotionally, and to impress somebody. We were raised, most of us, if we're from the church, we're raised in this mindset of, if I do right, God's going to love me more. Because if I do wrong, then God's not going to love me. So then we build this life of striving. We build this life of do's. Let me get my list. But most of the time, it's not just us that we're looking at. We're looking at others first. And we're checking off their list for them. There's nothing I can do to get God to love me more or to get God to love me less. Nothing. We are called to say yes first to our worth. And then we are called to say yes to others' values. Remember what Ezekiel, what it was said in Ezekiel, all souls are mine. Now we have a hard time with this, and they even had a hard time with this in Jesus' day. In Matthew chapter 5, in the Sermon on the Mount, he addresses this. And here's what he says in Matthew 5, 21 and 22. You've heard it said that our ancestors told you, you must not murder. But if you commit murder, you're subject to judgment. You're like, okay, I get that, Jesus. But there's more. But I say, if you are even angry with someone, you are subject to judgment. If you call someone an idiot, or in some versions, a fool, you are in danger of being brought before the court. And if you curse someone, you're in danger of the fires of hell. Now, this is from Jesus. Loving Jesus, all right? And this is what he said. So you've been told that murder, can't do it. Jesus says, if you are angry with your brother or sister, it's just as bad. We are called to say yes to others' value. We have to deal with the stuff inside of us so that we know that we have worth and then that we can show the worth of those around us. I don't know about you, but I struggle sometimes if I'm around a group of people and I want to prove that I'm right. I know I'm the only one like that in the room. And then somebody messes up, you know, and then you're like, I told you. Now, I don't say that out loud, but inside I'm like jumping up and down like, yes! I know. Like I said, I'm the only one like that, but don't judge me. But that is an example of privately rejoicing when people have setbacks. Are you guilty? Am I guilty? Me versus them. It happens. And your words have impact. I don't know who came up with the statement, sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me. He was smoking something. Because we know that that is not true. We know that the power of the tongue, James says this, that with our tongue we bless people and we curse people. With our tongue. And that is hard to do sometimes. Especially when we know we're right. The tip of the week, something that I've tried, you know, most of you know that I returned from my grandmother's celebration of life this past week. And I'll talk more about that later in the message. But there was something that she passed along to me. I'm not the best at. I'm trying to get better. But that is this here. If you can't say anything good about somebody, then don't say it. And she was great at that. And she challenged me in that. So my tip for all of us this week is to think about people and give them the benefit of the doubt. Not create doubt. I mean, many times in my house where I've had guys that were staying with me and the guys that were in our program back when I lived in the house with our guys in the 8 West program, and I would lose something, and I'd lose my key, or I'd misplace something, and the first thing out of my mouth is, what did they do to this? Where did they put this? And then I was like, oh, well, let me go back here. Some of you have partners, and that's what happens, see? You start automatically, our first thought is, it's not me. I didn't do anything. But it's you. You did something. And you create that doubt. So here's the challenge this week. Speak value and worth over people. It's not easy. But when I speak this week, I want to celebrate their worth over what I say. I think as we see these next few clips, there's three things that's going to hit you. The first thing is fight to save lives. That's going to be the overall message here. You remember the movie, but the actual incident, the Chilean miners that got caught in the mine, the 33? Or you see in this movie, the astronauts. It's the entire movie is about how to save Mark Watney's life. But here's the second thing I think we'll see. We must get involved in saving lives. Church and our faith is not built on coming here on Sundays alone, listening to somebody talk, listening to a message to go, oh, that was good, or oh, that was good, or the music this, and then you go out, do your own thing, and then you come back going, what else can I get for me? What else can I get for me? Because the message of the gospel is get involved in saving lives. What do you mean, Eric? Because this is what God does. When he says, follow me, we did a whole series on it of Christian, remember? But when he says, follow me, God delivers. He saves. This is how God rolls. Do you know how we know that? His very name, Yeshua. God saves, God delivers. His very name. Get involved in saving lives. And three, when you change a person's life, you can change the whole world. The ripple effect. Do you know it? It's when you take a pebble You throw it into the water, and it affects the entire body of water. The same thing can happen in life or business. One idea, thought, policy, gesture, example, or statement, an extra effort can set forth a ripple effect that can forever change you for the better. Fight to save lives. Get involved in saving lives. And when you change a person's life, remember, you're like, it's only one person, but guess what? It's more. I like this next scene. Fingers crossed, it's the right scene. But this scene is supposed to be where they now have figured out that Mark Watney's alive. And they've got to send him supplies and food. Otherwise, he only has 30 days of food there. And as you already know, he's trying to grow it, but they want to send these supplies. And here's the clip of what's happened. That is the end of the clip. All right? So, but you got the message right there. I swear that's the end of the clip. I'm sorry. That's the way it ends. But literally, you see just imagine it, all right? That was so good, wasn't it? Oh, Lord, help me. So we get the message. They send. It's exciting. I mean, they're cheering. The rocket's launched. It gets up there. Everybody's high-fiving. It's a success. And then all of a sudden, this little beep goes off. Beep, beep. And the one guy, everybody else is cheering. This one guy goes, oh, something's going on. He tells his partner. And the word gets around. Then all the cheering stops. And they look. And up in the atmosphere, the rocket explodes. And then their celebration is not happening anymore. So the supplies, this failed to launch. But it's so amazing in this part of the film, because when you're a part of something that's big and beautiful and you want to be a part of something that's involved in saving lives or part of something that's bigger than who we are, it gives you something inside. And I think it's tied into what we're called to live for. And Paul says it as he's addressing Ephesus. Ephesus was a church on the coast of western Turkey. And Paul wrote this in Ephesians. He says, I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened in order that you may know the hope to which he has called you. God's calling on your life. See God do great things through your hands and your work. Because God is inviting you. He's calling you to be a part of something bigger and beautiful. And what is it in your life? Our church does a lot of stuff during the week. We're doing more things. But it's those times, it's not just church stuff. It's when you're walking down the street, when you go into the coffee shop, and you're aware. Remember, the first thing I said today was noticing. God's not just in film. He's not just there. He's everywhere. And what do you notice when you walk into the coffee shop? What do you notice when you walk into the restaurant? And you're called to do something. You're called to bless somebody. You're called to say an encouraging word. When the person in front of you is in a hurry and they're getting all pissed off and they're rude, and you're almost try to get in there with them, then you're like, whoa, whoa, what's that worth? And then you be kind. You speak value. Be a part of something that's bigger than yourself. And that's what we see, I pray, in this next clip. Because these last two clips really need to be right.
If we do the maneuver, they'd have to send the supply ship or we die. We have the opportunity to force their hand.
So, are we gonna do it?
If it was up to me, we'd already be on our way.
But it is, though, isn't it? Up to you?
Not this time. This is something NASA expressly rejected. We're talking about mutiny here, which is not a word that I take lightly. So we do this together or not at all. And before you answer, consider the consequences. If we mess up the supply rendezvous, we die. If we mess up the Earth gravity assist, we die. If we do everything perfectly, we had 533 days to our mission. 533 more days before we see our families again. 533 days of unplanned space travel where anything could go wrong. If it's mission critical, we die.
Sign me up.
All right, cowboy, slow down. You and I were military. Chances are we go home, they'll court-martial us.
Oh, yeah, there's that.
And for the rest of you guys, I guarantee they will never send you back up here again.
Good. So if we go for it, how would it work?
I plot the course and execute it.
Remote override. They could take over the Hermes from mission control.
Can you disable it?
Hermes has 4 redundant flight computers, each connected to 3 redundant comm systems. We can't shut down the comms because we'd lose telemetry and guidance, and we can't shut down the computers because we need to run the ship. I'd have to disable remote override on each system. It's part of the OS. I'd have to jump over the code.
Okay, but like in English, like what would that mean?
I can do it.
Great. Well, it has to be unanimous.
If we do this, it will be over 900 days of space. That's more than enough space for one life, so yes.
I vote yes.
Let's go get him.
Johansson?
Yes.
Got an unscheduled status update from Hermes.
Roger, read it out.
I love that scene. Let's go get him. So, to fill you in, NASA has said it's not worth one man. The crew launched off of Mars during the storm. They went to the space station, and they have made a decision now to disregard NASA, and they're going to go save their friend. I wish that when, you know, I thought, okay, if I was sitting at that table, would I vote yes? One thing goes wrong, we're done. Would I vote yes to go and to help one? Because people have worth, we sacrifice. Here's what John says in 1 John 3:16. This is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. Really? This is how we know what love is. Usually, when we decide to do something that's very pivotal in our own life, it's not around the table. It's not a dramatic scene with the music in the background. It's just you and God. And you are challenged, and I am challenged, to make a difference in somebody's life. There's sacrifice everywhere. The astronauts added 18 months to not seeing their family. The NASA guy that gave them the info of how they were going to slingshot around the planet to meet up, as we're going to see in this last clip, he lost his job. Because we have this conditioning in our mind sometimes of God that is like a Santa Claus, maybe. All right? He knows when you've been naughty. He knows when you've been nice. He's checking that list. But that's not who God is. In Hebrews, it actually says in chapter 6, verse 10, that God is not unjust. He will not forget your work and the love you have shown as you have helped his people, and you continue to help them. The whole message of today, the whole message of this movie, the whole message of the gospel is about helping and loving those around us. Now, I hate to ruin it for you, but they save Mark Watney. And we're going to see that in this last clip. Fingers crossed.
Hold on, Mark.
Mark.
We almost got that one right. There was a little bit before that. So here's what happens. Mark Watney on the planet has to go 2,000 miles to another capsule that he gets in and launches up into space as his crew is circling. And they have to time this exactly right. Well, in this launch, he gets up into space. And as he's orbiting Mars, he realizes that they're not going to become close enough to where he can get rescued. So in his capsule, he has no way to maneuver it. He cuts his suit in his hand, and he uses it as a propulsion. Now, he throws him around a little bit at first as he's getting it, but he cuts that, he opens the hatch, and off he goes into space, being shot up closer to his crew. The crew captain, as you see you're here, says, I'm going after him. It's my responsibility. So she goes out, and he is going up toward her, and that's what you see happen right there. They connect, they go around, and you're like, oh my God, are they going to save him? What's going to happen? And of course, they save him. I love thinking about heaven sightings in the movies. How many of you have seen the movie Gran Torino, the Clint Eastwood movie? You remember where they're driving along the lake there at the end, and it's like a heaven sighting? It's like, oh, it's so peaceful. It's so great. But I think we all like rescue stories. I mean, rescue movies. Star Wars. Right? I know we've seen it, you know, now there's 9 episodes out there, and some not so good, but it's still there. You know, it's still there. Or what about Lord of the Rings, the epic rescue? Or what about Taken? Somebody's going to get taken and somebody's going to get found. If you've seen those movies, then you know what I just said. But the best rescue story of all time, Die Hard, isn't it? Some of you are like, what? God put the rescue story in us. Do you realize that? Scripture is a rescue story. The Messiah was not just coming to deliver his people. He came to deliver everyone. When Jesus was on the cross, he said these words. Remember, tetelestai means it is finished. Or in relation to the Martian, we got him. We got him. In Luke 15, Jesus is fielding a complaint from the religious leaders, from the churchgoers, the synagogue attenders, if you will. And they had an issue with who Jesus was hanging around. Jesus would hang around with sinners and those who were not really welcome in church, and they didn't like it. So they were approaching him and wanted to know why. So Jesus tells a story, 3 stories in Luke 15. The first is about a lost sheep, a shepherd that loses a sheep. The second story was about a woman who lost a coin. And the third story, you may be more familiar with, is the father that lost a son, the prodigal son. In all 3 stories, Jesus says this: it is more important for me to leave these that I have in the fold and go after the one who's lost. You're like, what? But that sometimes doesn't make sense. Well, when you look at the last story of the prodigal son, if you're a prodigal son, you love this part. If you're not a prodigal son, you don't like this story. Because the prodigal son, the son goes to the father and says, I want my inheritance because I want to go party. I want to go do what I want to do. And the father says, fine. He gives him his inheritance. He goes off. He lives it up. He squanders it away. And then he ends up homeless. He's in a pig pen. And as he sees these servants come and feeding these pigs, he came to his senses and he said, how much more do I have at my father's house, even if I went back as a servant? I know I'm not worthy to be his son anymore because of what I've done. But I'm going to go back anyway. So you know what he did? He prepared this speech. And the speech was, Father, forgive me. I've wronged you. I've wronged my family. All this. So he goes. And you'd think the religious leaders would hope that this story would have the father sitting there with his arms crossed going, what do you think you're doing? You're going to pay for what you did. But he didn't. Jesus tells the story that from afar, a long way off, the father sees the son coming toward him. And the father runs out to meet the son. The son had prepared that speech and starts to say it to the father. And what does the father do? Didn't even listen. Didn't even hear him. He's like, go get the best robe. Go get the ring. Go kill the fatted calf. There's a party. Because my son who was lost is now found. But here's where it gets sticky. Because we love that part of the story. But the older brother who never left. The older brother never left home. And he goes to the father and he says, what do you mean? Throwing this party for the son that went and squandered all of your inheritance away. It's like, what's the deal? I've never left you. And Jesus says, my son and your brother was lost. And now he is found. I'm glad you never left me. It's not a comparison. I'm glad you never left me. But guess what? My son is back. And now he gets his inheritance back. The older brother says, that ain't fair. Well, it's not about being fair. Because our fair is a little off sometimes. But Jesus tells this story. And he was ridiculed for it. But there's joy over one rescue, ladies and gentlemen. There's joy over one rescue. The moral to the story, you are worth it. You are worth it. It's a party that's waiting for you. Heaven celebrated. We got him. We got her. The decorations are hung and they're ready. God is a God of celebration. Say yes to Jesus to experience connection. I told you I was going to talk a little bit about my grandmother that I was very close to. I lost my mom when I was 7 years old, and this was my mom's mom. I was raised the early part of my life by my grandma, and so we had a real close relationship. And you've heard me talk about her many times. We told jokes, and she wanted to make sure I was still singing. Now, Eric, don't you stop singing. I know, Gemma, but I'm kind of busy. But don't you stop singing. How'd your message go today? Tell me about your message. She was my biggest cheerleader. But something happened 6 years ago when my grandfather died. And I felt this presence come over me at a particular event that I was in. It was so overwhelming to me, I had to sit down. And I knew and I felt that my grandfather was trying to communicate to me. Bear with me. And those of you who know my story and know where I've come from and dealing in my own personal demons and my own personal sexuality. I always felt like my mom died and she never knew what I went through. So I always had this lingering thought in my mind, am I really worth it to my mom? Am I of worth to mom? What would she think about me? So when my grandfather passed away, I felt like my mom was trying to communicate with me and kind of resolving some of this stuff where we talk about saving lives and we start talking about helping others, but then it gets back to a core of us and who we are and what we really feel about what God has created and the worth he's put inside us. So my grandmother and I have talked about that since that happened all the way up until she died. And I said, Grandma, do you think that that really can happen? Do you think that when someone dies, their spirit is still around, that they can communicate and they can communicate that love? I just feel like Mom was trying to tell me something. And she says, I do believe it. I was like, well, I think I want to try to pursue it. I want to try to figure that out. She says, I will pray for you and I agree with you. I got a call a few months ago to where my grandmother had fallen. She's 96. And I flew out and was with her during her surgery, and she made it through surgery. She was fine. Her hip was fine, but she had other complications. So last week she passed away. And she's in a much better place now. But I found out the news, and I went home, and I reflected on the person that she was and what she did in me. Because she was the one that gave me the heart for giving. And I mourned and I grieved at the same time knowing that she was in a better place. I got in my truck and I was coming to work the next day. I was driving, and I simply said this statement. Gemma, are you there? And as clear as day, as clear as you're sitting here in front of me, I saw my Gemma. And next to her was Gendad, my grandfather. And next on the other side of her was my mom. And here's exactly what they said to me in unison. I said, Eric, we love you, and we're proud of you. Amen. And I couldn't hardly see the road anymore. It was almost as if, after years, I'm 43 years old now. I am old as dirt now. I'm just kidding. But from the age of 7... not even knowing and different things that happen in your life, and then all of a sudden God takes one situation or one thing through saving lives and he says, you are worth it. And because you are worth it and you find your calling, as it says in the scripture, then you can help save lives. You can reach down and you can save lives. And it starts with one. And Jesus, at that table, did exactly that. All this Imago Dei image of God that we see in our art, in our lyrics, comes from what Jesus Christ did when he says, I'm going to break the mold and I'm going to give my life for those who can't give their own. They don't know what that is. And he took the bread and he broke it. And he said, this is my body that's broken for you. As oft as you eat, remember me. And then he held up the cup. He said, this is my blood. It's going to be shed for you. I'm going to give my life for you. as often as you drink it, remember what I have done. I'm going to ask the communion service to make your way forward this morning. This morning, both sides are grape juice. As you make your way forward this morning, I want you to ask yourself two things. The first one, am I worth it? And you are. Jesus said so. And then, if anyone's worth it, then anyone's worth it. And what are we doing to pass that message to our neighbor? God, do in us what we can't do for ourselves. Heal us when we can't heal ourselves. Show us our worth when we can't show us our worth. Help us get out of our mindset the list of things that we think we have to do to be more spiritual, because you're a God of our spiritual life. When you're not a God of our spiritual life, you're a God of our life. The messy part. So God, today, may we live this way. Come when you're ready.